Next case is 05-2137 and 2384, Harry Gim versus Timberline Post and Frame.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Carrie Evans. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Westfield Insurance Company. The issue that is presented in this appeal is whether or not a motion to intervene on behalf of an insurer who seeks to participate in discovery and submit jury interrogatories in a case is a final order pursuant to Revised Code 2505.02. Westfield is seeking from this court a determination that there is an immediate appellate check on a trial court's discretion in whether to deny a motion to intervene by an insurer. This case is here both on a merit appeal as well as a certified conflict. Right now there is basically three different procedures by which the appellate courts in Ohio are proceeding. We have a group of courts that are saying that an appeal from a motion to intervene is not a final order pursuant to 2505.02. There's another group of courts that is saying, yes, it is a final order, but it is not appealable unless the requirements of Civil Rule 54 are also met. And then we have a third set of appellate courts that are saying, yes, it is not only a final appealable order, but Civil Rule 54 doesn't apply.
There's no question here that Westfield's reason for attempting to intervene in the case here was not to assert a claim or a defense, but to really to engage in discovery, essentially. Isn't that true for its other case, for its declaratory judgment action case?
That's correct, Your Honor.
How does the rule provide for that, the statute provide for that?
The statute as far as civil procedure and how we would enter into the case?
Right.
We filed a motion to intervene pursuant to Civil Rule 24. Pursuant to Civil Rule 24, we attached to our motion to intervene a proposed intervener's complaint. I believe we could have intervened either by way of complaint or by requesting leave to file an answer to assert generally that we deny the allegations in the complaint, but that we also had another interest in the case.
But the statute seems to say that there has to be a claim or a defense, which is sought.
Your Honor, I believe in evaluating Civil Rule 24, in order to have the mandatory right to intervene in a case, it doesn't require you to actually have a claim. It requires you to have an interest, which is likely to be impaired by a determination of the case. What the lower part of Section C of Civil Rule 24 requires is that you file a pleading, which would be under Civil Rule 7A. You're required to file a pleading, but it doesn't require you to state the elements anywhere in Civil Rule 24 that you must state a claim or defenses in Civil Rule 8. Instead, it just requires that you file a pleading, that you identify yourself as a party to that case.
A pleading, as defined in Civil Rule 7A, setting forth the claim or defense for which intervention is sought. That's the rest of the sentence of the rule, as you know. How do we get around that requirement?
I believe that it's not truly, when evaluating this, I believe what the appropriate method may be is to file actually an answer seeking defend in the case, which would be what we were really seeking to do. We were seeking to stand in the case on the side of our insured, but to ask various questions as to any judgment that was entered against that insured. That's what Westfield was seeking. Westfield was seeking that if this case did proceed to trial and that our insured defended, and that our insured ultimately was found liable and also was found to have a judgment entered against it, that Westfield, pursuant to its interest as far as coverage and that ultimate indemnification that would be owed, could ask questions. And the only way we could do that is through submitting jury interrogatories. The only way for us to get into the mind of those jurors and to find out what elements of damages they were awarding and for what was to ask that particular jury, not a jury in our declaratory judgment case or not a jury in a supplemental complaint against us.
So the end result of what you sought as this played out would be that you were in the case, Westfield was.
Would right? be an intervening interested party.
But your ultimate goal is to, if your insured gets tagged, to set up a case that the insured is flying solo, that your insurance policy doesn't apply?
Or that it does apply, Your Honor. What we sought in this case, there were clear...
You were trying to establish that you owed a defense and coverage?
There was a separate declaratory judgment action which had questions as far as the policy language and what the coverage would be. The coverage, in this case, it was a pole barn that was constructed by our insured. The coverages that were owed were fairly clear. We did not owe any coverage for defects in the structure that fell down. We're not going to pay for any damage, as a jury said. You owe the plaintiff in this case $75,000 because he no longer has a pole barn. What Westfield said is we do owe you coverage, and we recognize that if this pole barn fell on something, if you had a car inside of the pole barn, if you had property inside of it that wasn't the work of our insured, if you had other structures outside of it that the building fell on and damaged, we owe you coverage for that.
So ultimately, this case goes to trial. Instead of just the defendant being named, it's going to be the jury's going to, unlike other cases, say, well, the insurance company is there. So the implication of the jury is there is insurance, but your ultimate objective is to not have insurance.
Relax.
So isn't the end result giving a totally false impression to the jury from what you're trying to set up here?
Your Honor, I believe that the insurance company would not be identified as an actual party to the case, as there truly isn't a claim being asserted, and that the only interest is making sure that these questions are answered and that the insurer is truly the only one that has an interest in making sure these things are identified. The other parties are in a much better situation of denying the insurance company knowledge and information and making their arguments that we think you owe the whole thing. We think you owe every dollar that was awarded by this jury, rather than having the insurance company intervene solely for the purpose of submitting questions to the jury, not coming into court, not sitting at counsel table, not making arguments, not submitting evidence, merely submitting for the court's consideration and counsel's consideration whether there are appropriate jury interrogatories that are in line with the liability issue and the damage issues that should be answered, that would be part of the factual findings that this jury would have to make anyway. These are determinations and thought processes that this jury is going to have to enter into. They're going to have to identify what facts support their award of damages. We merely want to create a record that can later be used because there's no other means to do so.
Why can't the, let's say you get a judgment for $75,000 and they don't ask interrogatories, why isn't it the burden upon the insured party in the declaratory judgment action to say, I was awarded $75,000, but he still has to prove what of that $75,000 in your declaratory judgment case is related to the insurance coverage?
At this juncture, I would say that is what the appellate court was asking and saying that we should do, that we should pursue this issue later. But what that is actually asking to do, I believe, is impossible, is to set another group of jurors in a trial and ask them to go back and evaluate the thought process of another set of jurors. The second time we try this case, whether it be on a supplemental complaint by the plaintiff against the insurer or by the insurer against the insured, you end up with different people going back and second-guessing. Who's to say they would agree that that's the total amount of damages? Who's to say that they would agree that there was even liability in the case? Then we have a situation where the insurer owes a duty. We owe an obligation to our insurer to indemnify them for a portion of a specific judgment. Say it's $100,000. We owe them a duty to evaluate that, but we don't have a means to do so. Because if we have a second trial, we may have jurors that don't even agree with that verdict. They can't enter that thought process and gather that information that could have been gathered in the other process.
Well, counsel, would that be before the second jury? Wouldn't that be a given to the second jury that they have a judgment awarded? And the declaratory judgment is based upon a set of facts that is beyond their consideration to deviate from?
Where we stand as far as what facts would be established as far as collateral estoppel for the insurer would be, since we've attempted to intervene, we've been denied the right to intervene, therefore we are not bound by the decision that's been entered, therefore there would be subsequent litigation against us and in a declaratory judgment action by which all elements would have to be proven once again. And therein is the problem. Do we go through a second trial on all of the elements again of liability and damages, and do we reach a second result? Don't believe it's appropriate for a second jury to step in and try to decide what the jury before it was attempting to do or attempting to decide.
But hasn't that issue been resolved in Howell versus Richardson? And isn't there an issue of estoppel here?
There isn't an issue of estoppel here. Howell is distinguishable. This is in Howell, there was a factual determination that could be made, not necessarily in the first case, but could be made in a subsequent case, whether or not there was an intentional act that was committed.
But the indication in Howell was that you would be forced to intervene because you would be stopped from relitigating a second case, what had been decided in the first.
Correct, and what our appellate court in this case and appellate courts have found is if you make an attempt to intervene, you don't need to worry because collateral estoppel is not going to apply. Collateral estoppel will not be used against you as long as you've attempted to assert your claims but been denied the right to do so. So in the factual setting of this case, we attempted to intervene and were denied that right. The appellate court is telling us, no, now you don't have to worry about collateral estoppel. That doesn't apply because you were not afforded the right to litigate that. You weren't afforded that opportunity initially. And therefore, distinguishable from how and how the insurance company sat back and didn't make any attempt to intervene in the case.
Yes.
And ultimately, because of its decision to sit back and not attempt to intervene, it was held to be bound by that decision. Our concern in this case on behalf of the insurer is that they're being bound on a, they might not be bound by a judgment, but they have no remedy, no opportunity to have a judgment afforded.
But isn't that the subject of the merits of the appeal, not whether this is a final appealable order? Can you tell what section of the statute does this qualify under?
That is something that's unclear in the law, and an argument that I'm presenting to the court that this falls under 2505.02b4.
Yeah, you concede that it's not doesn't qualify under B1?
I believe it does qualify under B1. But my concern and the reason that I'm asking this court to look to section B4 is because of the importance of the availability of an immediate appeal. And section B4 with regard to provisional remedies, the purpose for providing that immediate appeal with regard to provisional remedies is that this court has recognized the importance of the right to immediate appeal. Civil Rule 54 wouldn't apply if this is a final order pursuant to 2505.02b4.
But isn't a provisional remedy something that's designed to aid the existing parties? It's not a mechanism for adding parties.
I could not find a case in which provisional remedies at any time referred to a motion to intervene. I found them with regard to situations with changing a venue. The most analogous situation that I can point the court to is that it's been held to apply to the suppression of evidence in a criminal prosecution case, saying that if the evidence is suppressed, there is an immediate need for an appeal because of double jeopardy issues and the likelihood that there will be no conviction unless this is reconsidered before the trial goes forward. Similar in this case, what I'm saying is when an insurer seeks to intervene, it is in that case, it is in that jury verdict in which we will obtain the information that we need. If the trial proceeds and it isn't determined in that case, we lose that chance. We lose the chance to submit those jury interrogatories. We lose the chance to obtain that information.
Do you envision then that all you would be doing is intervening in the case as a party, never appearing in court, but simply submitting interrogatories to test a jury verdict to the court and having the court submit those to the jury?
Correct. Yes, that is what we were asking for a right to do.
Well, but how does someone who's not a party, Justice O'Donnell said that you want to enter not as a party, how does someone not a party offer interrogatories to a jury?
Well,
happens
with the issue of collateral estoppel, we can be bound by this judgment if we don't intervene. We have an interest in the action, which is established. There is a substantial right by the insurer that's established. We believe that we met the requirements for intervention as far as an interest, and an interest that can be impaired and is not represented by any other parties. Because of that interest, we believe that we had a right to information. And information in the form of answers to those jury interrogatories telling us this is what we've awarded damages for, so we can then, in the enforcement stage of this judgment,
so
do what we have to do.
You intervene as an interested entity,
yes.
Not as an interested party.
I believe if you intervene, you have to be a party to a case. I don't
yeah,
know
that's,
that.
That's what I'm trying to get. I'm trying to figure that out, exactly how what we're dealing with here. It's a, it seems to me, and it maybe it's because of my lack of knowledge, it seems to me like it's a new, fairly new concept that you intervene because you have an interest, but you don't intervene, you don't become a party. You're kind of out here looking in, and you get to toss some paper in, for lack of a better term.
So you think you are a party? Would be.
I think you have to be identified
okay,
as a party.
Okay, and if you're a party, how does the judge send a verdict form in that doesn't list the parties?
I believe a verdict form would have to be submitted, but there's no claim by or against Westfield Insurance Company. Therefore, there's no determination by or against Westfield. And the form that would be submitted to the jury would only establish those parties that would be on either side of a claim. So although we're a party to the case, believe it's within, and I believe it also would be an issue for the trial court's discretion, how they proceed with the trial of their case. We weren't seeking to ask questions, as I said, or be a participant in trial. Unfortunately, the interest, if it were one that could be represented by the existing parties, there would be no right to intervene.
When I have Westfield Insurance right up there with the defendant's name, And how does the judge say no if you're a party?
Under the laws that we have in our state, obviously there is a right that's existed that a plaintiff can't claim hardship in seeking additional money. And a defendant can't claim, I have no money in order to pay a judgment. It's something that evidence, we've said, is not relevant evidence to a case and is best kept from a jury. There are several issues that are kept from our juries, whether they be collateral sources or
the
availability of insurance.
Not the names of the parties.
Ms. Evans, let me ask you a different question. Is there any precedent in other states that you can point us to where this has been done, or is this sort of sui generis, or is this first impression in Ohio and the country?
I did attempt to find other states. Unfortunately, this is tied to our civil rules and other states. I couldn't find any civil rules that were directly on point with our civil rules or really any other cases that were directly on point that I could argue to this court.
Well, how does your client seek to affect this remedy in other states?
I'm sorry, I'm not following your question.
All right. Has Westfield ever done this in any other case?
The only cases I'm aware of are cases in Ohio in which Westfield has sought intervention. There have been several cases since this issue has arisen and since this appeal has been filed with the court, and there continues to be a conflict in the state of Ohio. Westfield has been on both sides of those. We've been permitted to intervene and have these interrogatories submitted after our appeal was successful.
Are you aware of other carriers in other states who have accomplished this?
In other states? No, I'm not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, if there is no trial, could you explain how you would participate or not in the settlement process?
In this particular case, every case is different based upon the coverages. And the interesting thing in this case, and many in which insurers intervene, are that there's a mixture. We don't have, there's no coverage, there's complete coverage. We have somewhere in the middle. We owe coverage for part of it. And when there's that duty to defend under the policy, the duty is usually as to all the allegations in the complaint. So they are active in being, the insured was defended in this case by Westfield Insurance Company, although the company hired separate counsel in order to protect its interest in having certain facts determined.
So in cases where, as you mentioned at the beginning, there were certain cases where intervention was allowed, was it almost in the nature of the insurance company being considered a necessary party for the resolution of the case? I mean, talking about it being a former trial judge, knowing that the parties would want to know, you know, if they're talking settlement, that what is the coverage here, and if the insurance company had filed a deck action, you know, the idea that having everyone brought to the table at once was considered helpful to the litigants.
I can't say that Westfield or insurers would be considered a necessary party as far as the civil rules and be compelled to be in the case, but I can say yes, that this issue has come about whenever the coverage issues have been identified in order to, again, the other request was to participate in discovery. It's through that discovery process that we gain the information we need to usually mediate the cases. And if we can identify through discovery what are those damages, what are those issues that are covered and are not, it's good for both sides. The plaintiffs need to know what they're dealing with as far as coverages and not having coverage.
So Counsel, I'm trying to understand the process here. You informed us that under your policy, Westfield was providing a lawyer that was defending this case.
Yes.
Then you hire a second lawyer to put the company in as a named party, because it would be a conflict of interest for the first lawyer to request these interrogatories, or
I would say it could run against the insured's interest if an insured believes that the majority of the judgment may not be covered.
So did the insured have his or her own lawyer as well?
In this case, I believe there was. There was counsel that was both personal counsel as well as insurance counsel.
So you're seeking to have two Westfield lawyers with different objectives plus the insured's lawyer.
Well, the Westfield lawyer with the client being the insured and all of his duties and loyalties running to that insured. Myself as an attorney on behalf of Westfield looking to the next step and what is necessary for Westfield to know what its obligations will be and what amounts to be paid. If there are no further questions, Westfield respectfully requests that this court grant in the affirmative the request that we've made. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. Fortunately, the appellee did not timely file a brief, so he waives oral argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.